looking at is a bunker located in north central Indiana. It is right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. Also nearby and out back is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. Your mission, Tom, should you decide to accept it, is to enter the bunker and broadcast an internet radio show on the Insurgent Radio Network. While broadcasting, you are to supply information to the listeners on the big website, resist.com. As always, should you or any of your insurgency force be caught or killed, Echo will disavow any knowledge of your actions. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Tom.
Boy, have I got good news for all you lone wolves out there, and all you half-lone wolves, and all you cells out there, above ground and below ground, man. I got news. Did you see on TV all that stuff that they're trying to figure out, that war equipment to get back to the United States? It's going to cost them billions to get it back. Cost them billions, and the arms producers made super fortunes out of the whole thing. And most of them were not even used. And now they're talking about bringing them back. They said this is going to be bigger than the Berlin airlift. Well, I don't think they're going to bring them back, because I've had some secret phone calls in the night from certain agencies. And they're offering me a deal on this stuff. And some of this stuff is brand new. I mean, they've got tanks still in the package. I mean, you know, what? How could you beat that? But, you know, usually I get it for 10 cents on the dollar. You're not going to believe this. If I'll get them out of there, I'll have them for 1 cent on the dollar. So imagine what a big new tank would cost. Yeah. Well, I'm making a deal with the communist Chinese. I throw that in there just to piss off the right wing. And they got an armada of Chinese junks, and they will bring them over here. But we're going to have to offload them in Mexico or the Caribbean and get them up here. And then we'll have the biggest weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard in the world. And we'll be able to sell you, you know, like brand new tanks, half tracks, you name it, for 10 cents on the dollar. Because if I'm buying it for 1 cent on the dollar, I'm going to pass it along to you radical, terrible radical people that want to do something for the white race. And the best thing you can do for the white race is attack Chicago, New York, San Francisco, New Orleans, or where. Not everybody in the town, but the ruling class. Yeah, how about that? We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And I'm going to be here all day today. I've been out hunting and gathering. That's what I do on Saturday mornings, at least. And I brought a whole van full of goodies back. If you want to make deals, garage sales is the place to do it. Auctions are not as good. Auctions, if you really know your stuff, sometimes you can make out. But it's garage sales. So I picked up a guy had a Dell computer that had Linux in it, all set up from his office that they were selling off. And I've been encouraged to get into this Linux stuff. This is a says Linux Mint 15. I don't know anybody out there knows about it. I've got some of my relatives looking at it. Anyhow, I picked that up for $10, the whole computer, which is one of the boat anchor Dells, but I've got a couple of those Dells around here and they work real well. Yeah. So anyhow, got me one of those things you put on your seat in the truck or in the house, one of those modern jobs that rub your back and do all that vibrating and wiggling and stuff. Yeah. Almost like a lap dance. Anyhow, I got one of those brand new for $5. And I needed a ceiling lamp because we had a ceiling fan thing that went sour on us. $5 for a brand new one. Yeah. Oh, jeez. It's like taking candy from a baby. I had to take a couple of tires in for repair. And luckily, I got a good buddy that got the tire business. And he did a whole bunch of work for $20, man. That pays to you know, a lot of people agree with your politics, and they help you out in different ways. They don't have to put a bumper sticker on their forehead. They know who you are, you know who they are, and they give you little clues of how they feel, and also they'll help you out in business. And if you don't have a network like that set up, you better do it. You know, you need to do it, because out there in Fallbrook, California, where I was for so many years, I had a network like you wouldn't believe, and I still use some of that network here in Indiana. If I need a car part and I can't get it anyplace, I call my good buddies at my friendly White Power Wrecking Yard, and they look all over the country and find it for me, send it out to me, give me a good deal. So anyhow, that's the story. My God, I'm sticking to it. I want to tell you guys, too, if you've got a car or truck or anything that's got 14-inch wheels on it, you better switch it over. Now, you can still buy 14-inch tires brand new, yeah, but you're going to pay $70-$80 for a tire. And what you need to do is put 15-inch rims. You know, search around and find yourself some 15-inch rims and put on there, because 15-inch tires are no problem, but there's no 14-inch used tires around without really scrounging, so remember that. And why they would put 14-inch tires on a big Chrysler van is beyond me. They should have just had, I know they had a choice, I guess, that you could have 14s or 15s. 14s, you're a little bit closer to the ground, but so what? I'd rather be a little higher up. And everywhere I go, the tire people tell me that this winter was murder on tires. That it really, this hard winter we had, just tore the hell out of tires. Hey, you know, I get these requests once in a while. I got a request for a couple of songs yesterday. And the Lone Wolf that I put them on for, he played them at his house. He had a couple of gals over there. And they got so excited, believe me, he scored. He did. He did, just from us playing that music on our show. So you guys out there that have trouble scoring, hey, request a song, and usually a lovey-dovey song, and you'll see what happens. It's magic. Well, talk about dummies. A lot of these whites that fled South Africa, went to England, the United States, and so forth. Can't believe it. With the South African economy dipping below, I believe it's Nigeria or Kenya's economy, whites are moving back to niggerized South Africa. Unbelievable. Let's see what they say, because these people are in euphoria. They're back in South Africa, ready to be slaughtered. Just a minute.
Wallace Short has come home after 10 years in Britain, along with his wife and their two daughters, who were born in London.
Hello. And then Jessie had the brown pot.
Oh, it's wonderful.
At their old home. But none of them regret coming back to South Africa.
Not yet.
That was our small garden in London, eh?
Yeah. The little kids there.
Fitted in the back garden.
You gotta let them play out
now
in the street.
Now there's a bit more space for the trampoline. There's sunshine almost every day.
Yeah.
And their house is a far cry from the 75 square meters they occupied in London.
London was very good to us, but it was never home. You know, it was never the same quality of life that you would be able to have here.
Yeah.
Keep
your gun loaded,
baby. We love being home.
They are among the growing numbers of South Africans who've moved home in recent years. There's even a website to help with the move, offering practical advice on how to find a house or a job. After the end of apartheid, around 800,000 white South Africans left the country over 10 years. That was about one in every five whites. More recently, the brain drain has spread across the population, whites, blacks, Indians, and everyone in between. The idea for the website is to convince them to come home.
Our aim is to focus on the scarce skills in South Africa. So your doctors and nurses, accountants, IT professionals, all the industries where we really need expertise, we need leadership, and we need strong international skills to come home and create jobs and help grow the economy.
Wallace Short fits the bill. As an IT engineer, he quickly found a job in a local company. Some whites worry about Black Economic Empowerment, or BEE, an affirmative action program that favors people who were historically disadvantaged.
Yeah.
I was really pretty confident that I would get a job, even though there was BEE available. I mean, BEE is an option. The thing is, though, with the technical side, you cannot fill those positions with BEE candidates if they don't have the experience.
Real estate agents say the trend is growing. The number of people selling their homes because they're emigrating is at an all-time low. That's partly because South Africa's political stability and economic growth are more attractive when America and Europe are struggling.
We know Europe is in trouble. The United States economy is weak as well. So a large part of the global economy to where people often immigrate from South Africa is not performing well. Job prospects aren't good. And I think that too is slowing the immigration rate.
Wallace Short is rebuilding a house and a life in South Africa. He doesn't plan to leave, and he tells that to all his South African friends, still living under London's grey skies.
Well, isn't that just peachy keen? You didn't tell about the crime rate. You didn't tell about all the farmers that have been hacked to pieces, and all the people in the cities who have been hacked to pieces. And BEE, affirmative action, and all that kind of stuff. Oh, well, what he's saying is whites are smarter, they're better trained, with more experience. So this is what's going to be the future of the white race. They're going to become vagabonds that go from one country to another to fill a need of technical abilities. And they're not going to need a whole lot of them, but they're going to need a significant number. So this is a new technoclass white group, and the ruling class don't want to breed you clear out because they need you. They need a certain amount of whites to keep things running. And I see on these real estate signs here in South Africa, there's all kinds of Jew names, Jew real estate people, and the whole bit. Oh, they play people, the white people, like a yo-yo. I'm telling you. Well, anyhow, good luck there, sir. You moved from England back then. Well, England, hell, you probably got as many niggers running around your neighborhood in London as you do down there, maybe more. And they're all got machetes. Now, for this dimwit that just moved his family and his two little baby girls down there to South Africa, let's listen to what President Zuma says. The big black daddy, the Mac Daddy down in South Africa. Are we ready for this? Come on, put it on there, engineer. Oh. Hey, they're goose-stepping here in this thing. Pay attention real close.
The ownership of the economy is still primarily in the hands of white males, as it has always been. In Strategy and Tactics 2012, we request conference to discuss in particular the notion of a second transition to economic and social emancipation.
Let's do that again. I had it too loud there.
The sheep of the economy.
Ah, come on there, Zuma. Jacob Zuma. Got a Jew Jacob name.
The ownership of the economy is still primarily in the hands of white males,
oh,
as
man.
It has always been.
Like it's always been.
In Strategy and Tactics 2012, we request conference to discuss in particular the notion of a second transition to economic and social emancipation. The Constitution of the Republic enjoins the state to take legislative and other measures to enable citizens to gain land rights. Our position is that the current willing buyer, willing seller model must be reviewed.
And then he goes into a dance. Then they all start dancing and clapping their hands. Hundreds of them in this party. The white man is still got too much. He just has too much in South Africa. So we got to go out and change that and take that land away from him and give it to me. And then I can sell it and to the corporations and put that money in the bank in Paris. So when I have to flee the country. Yeah. Now, these same white people that are moving back to South Africa are not listening to this. You know, it's like I've told you the story that's out of Dr. Zhivago. At one point when the peasants and workers are getting restless and they're beginning to march in the street, it's snowing and they're in rags and they're marching down on the street, and if you look up, it shows you in the movie the rich ruling class and all their finery and jewelry up above in this big hall of plenty of food, plenty of booze, everything, just having a great time as the workers begin to show a lot of discontent. So that's what you're going to see here. These white people are not going to pay attention, and all of a sudden they're going to have a machete in their forehead. And you want Terrible Tommy? You think Terrible Tommy is going to cry? Well, I won't laugh, but I sure as hell am not going to cry, because if they don't have the message by now, these are adult people. This man with his family, he's at least 50. He knows the score, or he should know the score, but he's suppressing it just to make money. It's not so much the small apartment in London, or maybe he's leaving London because there's too many niggers and Hindus and everything. So, what, you know, he's between the devil and the deep blue sea, I guess. Just make sure you got a lot of pepper spray. And now we have the chief of the majority party, Ugga Bugga Bugga, and he's going to talk to the Congress down there. And I've listened to most of this, and I don't hear anything about him referring to these bold statements about too many white people, own too much stuff, got too many good jobs. But he does talk about inequality. What does it mean by that? If it's a majority black place, it must be inequality towards the white people. But anyhow, let's listen to what he's got to say.
House, coming to you live from the SABC studio at Parliament in Cape Town, I'm Abra Barbia. In our program this morning, political parties debate President Jacob Zuma's State of the Nation address. And our guest this morning is the Chief Whip of the Official Opposition, Mr. Armiston Watson. We'll be talking to him about the Democratic Alliance agenda for the 2013 parliamentary session. Later in our program, ministers in the presidency, Mr. Trevor Manuel and Mr. Colin Shabane, brief the media on the implementation of the National Development Plan. We also have news about a new draft piece of legislation which seeks, among others, to outlaw the carrying of dangerous weapons at public gatherings and protests. Now, the debate on the State of the Nation address was yesterday led by the Chief Whip of the ruling party, Dr. Matole Motshekga. Dr. Motshekga gave his support to President Jacob Zuma's administration for its endeavors in making education a base for social, political, economic and industrial development. He also expressed support for the government programs aimed at job creation, youth development and economic development.
The ANC supports your resolve to use education to empower society as a whole, to change our mindsets, and most importantly, we support your resolve to make education the base of every development, social, political, economic, and industrial, to enhance social justice and to eliminate ignorance and all forms of religious, cultural, and political intolerance. The ANC is fully conscious of obstacles to delivery that your administration faces, but we are satisfied with your ability to overcome this. We have not escaped unscathed by the global recession. Unemployment, poverty and inequality threaten to derail our national democratic revolution. Your administration has identified targeted outputs of job creation, youth development and growing the economy, and developed clear proposals on the potential of all sectors of the economy to generate substantial jobs, empowerment of the youth, and effective monitoring of all the targets that have been lost set. Your infrastructure rollout as well would provide means to create jobs and build the economy. in focusing on the future, re-emphasizing that this is a government that looks forward. The country's national development plan will aims to eliminate poverty and reduce inequality by 2030 must be embraced by all of us.
Dr. Motshekga also gave the president the assurance that his party will create better coordination for oversight programs at all three spheres of government, including the two houses of parliament.
In support of your administration, parliament...
Well, anyhow, did you hear him say... Now, this is the majority opposition party. You hear him say anything about disagreeing with Zuma when Zuma said... There's too many white people with they got the jobs, they got the technicalities, and they got some land too. you didn't hear him disagree with that. So the chemistry is there for another bloodbath or a new bloodbath. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while, but it's going to happen, and then they're going to cry, "Save us! Save us! Yeah, save us!" Well, you had your chance. When you had the military, you had the A-bombs, you had everything down there. You had the jet fighters and everything, and you didn't do what you needed to do, you know. Unfortunately, there's a lot of good people in South Africa that wanted to do something, and some that did do something, but they were so far outnumbered, and that's exactly what it will be in this country, you know. That's exactly what it will be in this country. You know, most of this stuff's on the web or on YouTube. These bastards are telling you what they're going to do to you, or what they want to do to you. So there's no excuse for anybody that's got a computer. Forget ABC. See, that channel there that I just played was ABC South Africa. You see, the big corporation, the capitalistas, still control it all. They don't care about white people. They just care about the profits, baby. Just follow the money. You know, Whitey reminds me of when I was a kid and I used to go rabbit hunting. Used to put a lot of meat on the table and sell the hides. But when I'd go out in the woods, which is only about it's only about 4 blocks from where I'm at now, behind me, and I kick in the wintertime, rabbit season, I kick up a rabbit and he'd take off running. Now, you might think I'd go traipsing after that rabbit, wear myself out, and probably never catch him anyhow. But I'd get up on a high point, right there where I kicked him up, and that rabbit, he'd go in a big circle. That may take an hour. He'd come right back where he started and get blasted. That's Whitey. And he's always moving from one town to another. He'd go to Nigger L.A., you know, I'm Mexican LA, Nigger Mexican Chicago, Nigger Mexican New York City, Nigger Mexican Miami. In other words, all the big cities are full of these predators. So Whitey, he said, "I'm going to escape this and go someplace else." And he gets there, and all of a sudden, damn, this is bad or worse than where I was. I'm going to run someplace else. He just keeps running. Keeps running. That's Whitey. Without understanding, it's time to stop and say no more. No more running. You screw with me, you're dead. That's it. Simple. No matter who you are, even the government, as far as that's concerned. Because if the government won't protect your life and so forth and allows these beasts to rape you and kill you and put a machete through your head, well, then, they're just as bad as, in fact, they're worse. So anyhow, that's what Whitey does. He's always running away, trying to escape this shit, man. And then you get the guys who are going to go way, way, way up in the hills. That's almost as bad. Because way, way, way up in the hills, if you turn up missing, nobody knows you're gone. Nobody knows you're gone. And so, I don't recommend moving way, way, way up in the hills. I think wherever you go, you should have a few white people around you. Not close, but like me, you know, the closest neighbor is a block away. Next closest is another block and a half. Next closest is about 5 blocks. I wouldn't want them any closer than that. But I don't want them too much farther away either, because when the ATF raided my house, immediately the phone was ringing. What's going on, Tom? You okay? You know? And that helps. I've told this story several times, that when we were forced out of our home in Fallbrook, California, we moved about a block away into an apartment building that was owned by one of our supporters. And every once in a while, I'd had contact, not often, with the Muslims, with Minister Farrakhan, after I went up to one of his big deals up there. Anyhow, I make it plain that I despise the government, number one, because everything that's happening to us, the government is allowing. This so-called criminal is a criminal government. And so I had information that the Muslims could use, because they were victims of federal snooping and everything, just like I was. So I called them. I said, I've got a file here. I want you to have it. Why would you call us? Because they knew who I was. I said, well, I don't like the government, and it's no skin off my nose. You come on up here and I'll give it to you. So this big black limo car pulls up in front of the apartment building, and there's about four of these guys in suits and bow ties get out, and my phone starts ringing. And right down the street from my apartment, there was a bar called the Red Eye Bar. The owner was a good friend of mine, and most of the people in it were friends of mine. They're on the phone. Tom, there's four niggers out front. Are you okay? Should we send some guys up there? I said, no, it's okay. I told them to come up. So anyhow, that's one reason not to be living too far out, you know? Just remember that. Remember what happened to the settlers when they'd have their log cabin way too far out, and the Indians, the Mongols would get them and rape their women and cut their heads off and like that. So remember that. Sometimes my helpful critics don't give me a break at all. Comment. When you ask the rhetorical question of who is the enemy and the racial criminals, and answer it by saying the church is in the State Department, that's 99% of it. I think you forgot the corporations in that equation. I never forget the corporations. In other words, let's just say capitalism, period. I would say that the true enemies are split 50-50 between the churches and corporate money. I have no disagreement with that. The State Department, in turn, is simply following along with those twin evils, pandering to keeping the religious right and the corporate elite happy and content. Yes, the State Department, though, is full of fanatics, that's for sure. I think you need to look beneath the State Department and see who the players are at the very core of the problem. The evil spreads out from there. Well, I've looked there many times. I've read many books on the subject, and I've listened to many speeches on the subject. I say, yes, it is corporations and the churches and the state. I mean, you know, I leave the corporations out one time, and I'm going to the damn woodshed. Come on, give me a break. A New Mexico nuclear waste dump, which saw a radiation leak in February, has hauled shipments of toxic waste barrels to a commercial Texas facility amid concerns that chemical reactions could trigger another release there. There's releases all over this country all the time. Go up there to Hanford, Washington, all over the place. We got this nuclear shit everywhere, and now they're even, of course, using the surplus uranium in all the weaponry, and they're shooting it up on all the training bases all around the country. I mean, you know, this whole place is ready to blow at any moment. Anything could happen. Anything could happen. And so I don't know, to comment on one thing in New Mexico, it seems just to sort of be not a waste of time, but it's just, it's everywhere, and nobody, well, very few, a small percentage. In fact, people on the so-called left, the progressives, get far more excited about the right wing, they're so into usually Christianity and my faith, they don't see anything like that. You know, science is bad, man. Only Jesus is going to straighten this out. How can you deal with people like that? You can't. You can't. So don't expect any straightening out of the environment, mental criminals of the corporate power from the right wing, because they support it. They support it. They think that any time you want to clean up the environment or do anything or put some new laws into place that are going to help protect the environment, you must be a goddamn communist. Get out of here, boy. Jesus is going to take care of all this. You know, all we have to do is get down on our goddamn knees and pray, and that baby Jesus will take care of it. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's all really gets my goat, you know, and sort of amusing almost in a dark sort of way, that when the tornadoes come through, they do their worst damage in the Bible Belt. Now, does that mean God hates people in the Bible Belt, the Bible people? I don't know, but it seems like he's always wiping them out. And then they come right back and say, well, we love God. We love God. He just wiped out our town, but that's probably because we're sinners and we haven't confessed and had ourselves dipped in the blood of Jesus. And if we all did that, those tornadoes wouldn't hit us. You know, one thing, when we talk about the church, a lot of people misread Lenin in Russia after the revolution. Of course, he didn't last too long after the revolution, but he did not say that they were going to forcefully suppress the churches. He said, we will withdraw finance of the churches and support of the churches and schools and things like that. And then it was his feeling that the church would gradually dwindle and die. Well, I'm sure it won't die. Dwindle and die. I think it'll dwindle, but it'll dwindle because of lack of money. What Lenin was saying, the state is not going to finance religion. Like in this country, the state does finance religion one way or another. But if you took, or if you tax the churches for all the property they own, all the businesses they own, that would be one way too. But the reason the church is so powerful is because of tax exemption and like that. So when Lenin said we won't forcefully suppress the church, we just won't advertise for it, we won't finance, the state will not finance it, and we will not promote it in the schools. And I agree completely. Well, now let's get into some heavy stuff here. And to do this, we're going to have to sneak around and be clever, because we've got to steal it off a rogue progressive guy by the name of Mike. So we're outside his studio here, and I've put this little spy microphone through the wall here, and we're going to get it now. If he says anything anti-white working class, or I mean, you know, includes us with the right wing and all that stuff, just ignore it. But he's about to talk, so I think he's already started, so let's get it.
And huge amounts of spent radioactive fuel are housed on site of the reactors. You know about this. That requires continuous cooling to prevent radioactive release. Now, designs which would automatically shut down and cool down in the event of an accident are ignored for what this article says are political reasons. I think what is meant by that is that the nuclear power industry, like most industries, control Congress. And a forced remedy to the situation I'm talking about here has been resisted by the nuclear power industry to the point that nothing gets done. This is what the Congress of the United States is all about now. This is how far advanced and how regressive has been Or, I guess that's the right word, regressive, has been the possibility that we could survive a serious event. It's not in the interest of the capitalists or the corporations to prevent this stuff. Because, not that they want to, you know, die of radiation poisoning too, they just figure, well, yeah, you know, why spend $100 million for that when I can just put it in an offshore bank account and use it to, you know, build another house, that kind of stuff. If the nuclear power companies and governments continue to cut costs and take large gambles, the next nuclear accident could make Fukushima look tame. The article goes on, a large solar storm which knocks out electric grids over wide portions of the planet will happen at some point in the future. Don't pretend it is unforeseeable. The nuclear power industry is on notice that it must spend the relatively small amounts of money necessary to prevent a widespread meltdown from the loss of power due to a solar storm. Relatively small amounts of money. Well, it would take relatively small amounts of money to fix the entire infrastructure of the United States, but it's not being done, and it will not be done. Because the will of the people is not what government responds to now. Government, in fact, doesn't respond at all. It does what it is told by the capitalists who own it. But I digress. As scientists warn of an impending solar storm that could collapse the national power grid, thrusting millions of us into darkness instantly, a debate has flared up between utilities and the federal government on the severity of such an event. NASA and the National Academy of Sciences previously stated that an electromagnetic pulse event from an intense solar storm could occur any time. And the National Academy of Sciences, you know, those godless bastards, say it could have the effect of frying electronics and knocking out transformers in the national electric grid system. And already there are separate published reports of massive solar storms of plasma, some as large as the Earth itself, flipping the surface. You've seen those pictures, and shooting out into space, with some recently having come close enough to Earth to affect worldwide communications and altered the flights of commercial aircraft near the North Pole. That's the science. But in February, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, which is a lobbying organization that represents the power industry, they issued a report asserting that a worst-case geomagnetic superstorm like the 1859 so-called Carrington event, likely wouldn't damage most power grid transformers at all. Instead, according to the lobbyists, it would cause voltage instability. You know, your lights would flicker and possibly result in blackouts lasting only a few hours or maybe a few days, but certainly not months or years. Well, of course not. Now, NERC, that's North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC is a jerk. The lobbying group, NERC's assertion, however, is at serious variance with the 2008 Congressional EMP Commission. Also, the 2008 National Academy of Sciences report. Also, the 2010 Federal Energy Regulatory Commission report. Also, the 2012 report by the Defense Committee of the British Parliament and others. But never mind the sciencey crap. Listen to the lobbyists. They know what's best for you, Truthy. Even the British scientists who contributed to the report to Parliament, the Defense Committee of the British Parliament report, came to their own independent assessment that a great storm would cause widespread damage to power grid transformers and result in a protracted blackout lasting months or even years with catastrophic consequences for global society. But NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, don't you love their name? which represents the power industry, said, nah, maybe some voltage instability, maybe a little blackout lasting a few hours, nothing to worry about. Move on, nothing to see. Now, the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, yeah, you have NERC and FERC, FERC, which regulates interstate electricity and other energy sales, but has no authority over local utilities to harden their grid sites. FERC says that as many as 130 million Americans could have problems for years if one of these geomagnetic storms really does penetrate or temporarily annihilate our magnetic field or alter it enough to the point where this energy gets through. Now, according to FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, U.S. transformers, on the average, are more than 30 years old. While they're all susceptible to internal heating. There's ample evidence that FERC has that reveals the damage to transformers from previous geomagnetic storms. For example, there was a serious transformer damage to the Salem nuclear power plant in New Jersey in the aftermath of the same geomagnetic storm that caused the March 1989 so-called Hydro-Québec blackout. Remember that? When the northeastern United States and huge sections of Quebec, Canada, lost all their power. Now, in addition to all this, we've spent tens of trillions of dollars on the so-called war on terror, but we failed to take steps to protect against the largest terrorist threat of all, an attack on the power supplies to nuclear power plants. An electromagnetic pulse which took out the power supply to a nuclear power plant could cause a Fukushima-style meltdown. And spent fuel pools are extremely vulnerable to terrorism. Let's forget the solar flare. Let's just talk about, you know, the bomb out now. Terrorism! Failing to harden our electrical grid invites an EMP attack because it is such an obvious vulnerability. It's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. Given that the Department of Homeland Security has already concluded that even North Korea can launch an EMP attack on the U.S., wouldn't you say this is a real vulnerability? We don't have to look to the sun. Look to Kim Un-jung, nut crazy nutball Dennis Rodman pal. He doesn't have to launch missiles. He doesn't have to send nuclear bombs. And here's the thing. Relatively easily, we could defend against this. Whether it's an attack by a maniac, whether it's an attack like Kim Jong crazy, whether it's an attack by an organized terror group, or whether it's a geomagnetic pulse from the sun. We can protect against it. But you know what? We're not.
Well, he hasn't detected our microphone yet, so I'm going to capture another segment here, one that Chris Hedges, remember him? this is from Chris Hedges, so but be quiet. We don't want to get be detected by this rogue progressive.
It was some of that lunacy leaked out. But after the big blowout, I guess he called the mental health department of AAA and got on the road again. Anyway, his latest essay, "We're Losing the Last Shreds of Legal Rights to Protect Ourselves from Oligarchy," that's the title, is another example of great Chris Hedges writing. But he consistently has a problem with using the correct tenses of verbs. He insists on using the present or future tense when he should be using the past tense. We're not losing, we've lost. And he gets delusional. Quote, If we do not rapidly build militant mass movements to overthrow corporate tyranny, including breaking the back of the two-party duopoly that is the mask of corporate power, yeah, that'll happen, we will lose our liberty, end quote. And there he does it again. It's lost our liberty, not lose our liberty. What's with this guy? Maybe he's like the climate scientists who privately admit among themselves it's too late to do anything, but in public don't want to scare the public completely out of their minds. According to the page views at Op-Ed News, the most popular was, from now on, our biggest mistake is believing we are free. It was about Obama signing the National Defense Authorization Act on December 31st, 2011. You read it on the program on January 2nd. We lost our liberty a couple of years ago on New Year's Eve. The moment the ink dried, anyone could be picked up and held indefinitely. Anyone. Just because we haven't been nabbed yet doesn't mean we're walking around free. Years ago, I had a large fish, a tiger Oscar, I kept in a 100-gallon aquarium. Twice a month, I'd buy a dozen so-called feeder goldfish and dump them into Oscar's tank. Over the next couple of weeks, he'd rendition every single one of them. Once when Oscar was down to one goldfish, I went to the pet store for a new supply of feeders. The goldfish that survived 2 weeks of a ravenous Oscar had a distinctive black spot on his dorsal fin. I came back, dumped in the latest batch of feeders, and Oscar began renditioning. 2 weeks later, Oscar was down to one fish again, and before I went to the store, I noticed it was the surviving goldfish from the last batch, the one with the black spot on its fin. Goldfish aren't able to express themselves very well, and it was definitely a case of anthropomorphism on my part when I thought the fish looked pretty damn anxious. So I got out the net, scooped it up, and put it in another tank. I figured any fish who survived a month with Oscar deserved its freedom. Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, Daniel Ellsberg, journalist Alexa O'Brien, Revolution Truth founder Tangerine Bolin, Icelandic parliamentarian Brigitte Jónsdóttir, and Occupy London activist Kay Wergola tried to get the Supreme Court, so to speak, to take Oscar out of our tank. The U.S. Supreme Court decided to refuse to hear the case. Now, let me digress just a moment. What he's talking about there is the National Defense Authorization Act. We talked about this earlier in the week. Chris Hedges and these other people sued before the Supreme Court to have it declared unconstitutional because it clearly violates the Posse Comitatus Act, which I think is the 17th or 18th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And the Supreme Court refused to hear it. Back to Bob. Swimming amongst us. We are able to pretend we're free right up until the moment we are eaten. So why does Chris Hedges say we are losing instead of we've lost? Oh, that's right. All we have to do is rapidly build militant mass movements, overthrow corporate tyranny, and break the back of the two-party duopoly that is the mask of corporate power. Check and double check. Whew, I thought we were in trouble there for a minute. Does that mean we have to get together with other liberals and progressives and talk about what we're going to do? Because if that's the case, I'm going to have to tell you another story. Years ago, when I worked for a special effects company, I came to work one day and everybody was just standing around. The big problem was there was a huge piece of equipment that had to be moved. It was very expensive. It was very heavy. The owners of the company were over in the corner of the soundstage talking about the best way to move the big, heavy, expensive thing. All sorts of plans were brought up and discarded. This went on all morning until one of the grips stood up and said, "F it!" He motioned to all of us to follow him, and we went over to the big, heavy, expensive thing. It took over a dozen of us to pick it up and move it to where it needed to go. The owners of the company were aghast. "What if you dropped it? What if you broke it?" "We didn't," said the grip. "What's next?" Look, we all know what has to happen. We either pull off a national strike or we don't. We either begin the first step toward a revolution or we don't. There will never be a national strike. Therefore, there will never be a revolution, peaceful or otherwise. Next question. What are we going to do about global climate change? It doesn't make any difference what we do.
we can all take shorter showers and switch out the switch out our light bulbs, recycle, take public transit, reduce our personal carbon footprint to zero, and it won't make any difference. It's capitalism that's killing the planet, not your electric toothbrush. The corporate-controlled countries committed to extracting all the carbon out of the ground and into our atmosphere have no intention of stopping. There will be no revolutions to stop them. Next question. How do you want to spend the last 100 years of human existence? Well, that's an easy one for me. Most of that time, I plan on being dead. Next question. Regards from beautiful British Columbia. Yeah, I know. It is difficult to it's difficult to stare the inevitable in the face. It really is. But I've been coming around to that way of thinking also. Not because Bob Alexander and I have deep conversations via the long-distance telephone, but simply because you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. And probably most of the people who listen to this program have pretty much arrived at the same conclusion. And that is, the way it appears right now, tonight, there is simply is not going to be a point at which this insanity stops. It stops because it has become overwhelming. Frankly, I'm frightened. I really am. So much for myself, because, you know, actuarially speaking, I don't have that much time left sucking in polluted oxygen. I just don't. But I have children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews or extended family members who are considerably younger than I am. And that's where the pain for me comes in. But like a lot of people who have taken a look at the warnings that have been going on for 25 years now, I don't know who's been paying attention. I know I haven't been paying as close of attention as I should have, except for the past decade. But power. Like I told you the story about Molly saying, "Daddy, we ought to recycle rather than continue to pollute the planet." And like your electric toothbrush that's destroying everything. It's capitalism. And he and Chris Hedges agree on that one, as I do. We'll be right back.
Well, at least, you know, if the right and the left could ever get their heads out of their asses, there could be something done, especially on the environmental issue, at least, to start it all. But they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. And that's the problem. And like he says, it's capitalism. There's no doubt about it. That unless you can put a bridle and a muzzle on capitalism, it's not going to cease. It's just going to devour everything. And the white race, the non-white races, all the races. Yeah. Okay, let's pull that microphone out through that little hole and we'll get on down the road and this crazy-ass progressive will never know we were here. Somebody at these football games have been throwing banana peelings at the black players. Now, come on.
Spain is the reigning world champion of soccer. In the past 10 days, two incidents of racism have sullied Spain's national pastime. European soccer's governing body has issued a stark warning, and just a month before the opening of the World Cup, there are calls to ban Spain from high-profile tournaments. Lauren Freyer reports from Madrid. Spaniards are eating a lot of bananas these days. Here a news anchor interrupts her live broadcast to peel a banana and declare that she's a monkey. It's all part of a backlash to something that happened on a soccer field here two weekends ago. Barcelona player Dani Alves, a dark-skinned Brazilian, was about to take a corner kick in a game against Villarreal near Valencia when a banana landed on the field right in front of him. At first, people weren't sure what it was, says Salvador Rodriguez Moya, who wrote a book about racism in Spanish soccer and happened to be watching the game.
Se comió el plátano y sacó el córner, es decir, no pueden conmigo.
Dani Alves picked up that banana, peeled it, took a bite, and then took the corner kick. And the message was, those racists can't rattle me, he says. Twitter and Instagram have exploded with celebrities, fellow soccer stars, even Italy's prime minister, posting selfies with bananas and the hashtag #WeAreAllMonkeys in various languages. It's a funny reaction to a very serious problem of racism in sports across Europe, says Georgina Siklossi with the European Network Against Racism in Brussels.
From racist chants to throwing bananas like we've seen in Spain, monkey chants, and of course black players are particularly targeted, but there have also been many examples of anti-Semitic slogans, Nazi salutes at different occasions in Eastern Europe.
Racism first became an issue in European soccer in 1970s England, when African and South American players first signed with top Premier League clubs. Now it's arrived in Spain, where La Liga attracts some of the world's best players. Carlos Alberto Pintinho was one of the first. He came from Brazil to play for Sevilla in 1981 when he was 25. But it was different back then, he says. You didn't have more than two foreigners on any Spanish team. Racism, it's so much worse now. In all the stadia, you can hear monkey chants. This is not good for our sport. The Spanish government passed anti-racism legislation in 2006 after then Barcelona, now Chelsea player Samuel Eto'o from Cameroon threatened to walk off the field amid racist abuse. The Spanish law slaps fines on soccer teams if they don't crack down on racist fans, but there are no criminal penalties. After eating the banana, Dani Alves joked he was glad for a little potassium boost. But then he offered a pretty scathing critique of Spain, where he lives and has dual nationality. Spain sells itself as being a first world country, but it's very backward, Alves told Brazilian radio. They're racist against foreigners. Alves also said he'd like to post a photo of that banana thrower on the internet to shame him. After several days, police finally arrested the man, a coach for Villarreal's youth soccer camps. He's been fired from that job and banned from the team's stadium for life. Villarreal has been fined nearly $17,000 for his behavior. Some anti-racism advocates say that's not enough, and that until there are criminal penalties for racism in Spanish sports, players will continue to be harassed. Just this past Sunday, a Senegalese midfielder who plays for Spain's Levante team was taunted by rival fans making monkey noises. Pape Diop turned around and did a little monkey dance in the direction of the racist fans, but afterward told reporters he's sick of this. This affects me a lot. It happens in many stadia. I don't know if it's racism or a lack of respect, he says, but it has to stop. Afterward, a delegation from the rival team visited Diop to apologize for their fans. Meanwhile, European soccer's governing body, UEFA, has called on Spain to take appropriate action. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
I just threw a banana peeling at my monitor. Yeah, splat. I don't seem to have that trouble when non-whites insult whites all the time. Every day. 24 hours a day. Whites could be the brunt of any joke. It's just a joke. Yeah. No problem. You know, when I was a kid, I used to be able to do that monkey talk real well, but I've lost my touch. Well, that's about it for Saturn's Day, this 10th of May, 2014. Saturn's Day, and we're working on two-thirds of a almost three-quarters of a moon. Pretty soon we're going to have a full moon. How about that? And then watch out. Happy hunting and gathering. This is Terrible Tommy. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day, 14-5. And what do we say? Shut up.
Cheer up, man. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble. Give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on! Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
Record.